See, our streets are changing over time. Bike lanes, road diets, sharrows. The streets are not just for cars and trucks these days. Our next guest is someone responsible for many changes. Jeanette Sadik Khan was New York City's transportation commissioner for several years under Mayor Michael Bloomberg. She writes about her ideas in Street Fight, Handbook for an Urban Revolution. And she's in Portland today for a talk at Powell's Books tonight with U.S. Representative Earl Blumenauer. Jeanette Sadik Khan, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Great to be with you, Jeffrey.
Great job, New York City transportation commissioner. What was your pathway to the job?
Well, actually, first of all, being a New Yorker for many, many years and walking the streets of New York is a great piece of background. And then I actually worked for Mayor Dinkins as his transportation advisor and then went to work for Bill Clinton in Washington as a federal transit administrator. And then went to work at an engineering firm, Parsons Brinckerhoff, for 10 years before I was tapped by Mayor Mike Bloomberg. So a nice combination of public-private experience, and I think also being a lawyer helped along the way to deal with the issues associated with risk.
No doubt. So as transportation commissioner in New York City, is that just streets or is it also subways and other transport?
No, it's 6,000 miles of streets, 489 bridges, a very large ferry operation, but no MTA, no subway and bus.
That's all state. Okay. Were you determined to shake things up when you took office?
Well, you know, our streets had basically been in some kind of suspended animation for over 50 years. And when you think about it, people really don't think about the street as being able to change. They just think of it as moving cars as fast as possible from point A to point B. And if you were in business and you didn't update your major capital asset for 50 years, you'd probably have a hard time still staying in business. So we were really working at updating our streets to meet 21st century needs.
Was the suspended animation in part because of the well-known undoing of Robert Moses, who was New York's public works dictator, in a sense, for decades? When he tried to go for Midtown Expressway, he was stopped by some local interests who thought, no, this is not the kind of thing we want in New York.
Yeah, well, I think that there's more to streets than just cars and highways and stoplights. And streets make up about a quarter of the public space in cities, so they really are front yards. But most people don't even think about the way they're designed or even have expectations that they can be better. And I think that's been baked in from decades and decades of this kind of highway hypnosis, that it was just about the car. And Robert Moses laid down that foundation and paved over lots of New York, which did some great things. We have some great bridges and incredible parks and playgrounds and Lincoln Center and the UN. But it also destroyed lots of neighborhoods. And what we're doing right now is reclaiming that space. And that foundation can be repurposed and bring a kind of Jane Jacobs urbanist perspective that really is more human-focused. And Jane Jacobs stopped him and showed the complexity of the street. And that's the kind of legacy that we're looking to re-engineer onto the streets of New York.
So it wasn't like it was an unknown concept that streets need to be shared. But even so, as you began to make the changes you were recommending, did you get a lot of pushback from the forces on four or more wheels?
Yeah, it was certainly a street fight, which is why we talk about, well, that's why that's the title of the book. And every inch of the 180 acres that we repurposed from cars and made accessible for people on foot and on bike was a fight. And, you know, all transportation is local, and people are passionate about their streets. And I think that people argue about them only underscores how important they really are. And when you talk about new ways to get around that aren't about driving, a lot of people really erupt. And there are 8.4 million people in New York, and sometimes I felt as though there were 8.4 million traffic engineers. So people take their streets personally and treat every parking space like it was their firstborn child. But, you know, even though change is difficult and people have a lot invested in the status quo, we found that given the choice, people will choose better streets.
You know, it's said of people who take over jobs as managers that one of the first things they should do is paint a wall, just to let people know that this is a different place now. And I wonder how quickly you might have put something out there to change things, to make it clear that there was a new sheriff in town.
Well, we worked very hard to set a new vision, and we set an agenda that was very much a translation of Mayor Bloomberg's Plan YC long-term sustainability agenda, which was about, you know, taking a look at the fact that we're going to have a million more New Yorkers in 2030, and that means we need to change the fundamental way we do business. And that had huge implications for how we use our streets. We're not going to double-deck our streets, and we're not going to double-deck our bridges. So we need to make changes with the streetscape that we have. And New Yorkers had grown tired of waiting for years and years to see change in their streets, and I think they'd basically given up. And so we moved fast to show what was possible, to reimagine the streets. And it didn't take decades, and it didn't take billions of dollars, but there's nothing more powerful than the proof of the possible. And so that's really what we did by kind of outlining the city that we wanted to see very quickly.
You know, it's been a long time since I've been in New York City. I'm actually from the New York area originally, but you've got the green bike lanes, as Portland and some other cities have as well. How much did you lay out? Did you put a bunch out at once, or did you kind of proceed with a few test plots first?
Well, with the bike lanes, we built over 400 miles of bike lanes in 6 years, and we also installed the first parking-protected bike lane in the United States. I had taken a trip to Copenhagen and seen how they did it there. Just by merely pushing the parking lane away from the curb, that served as this great barrier for cyclists to protect them. And what we found is by building these better bike lanes, we made the streets work better for everyone, whether you walked or whether you drove or whether you cycled. The streets were much, much safer, much better organized, and people really had an understanding of where they went in the roadbed, and making pedestrians, importantly, much more visible in the landscape. And so these kinds of changes actually also really dramatically improved the local businesses that were along these routes. We found that with protected bike lanes, local businesses saw an increase of over 50% in their receipts.
I have to believe that some of these people were complaining in the first place, though. And saying, come on, what are you doing to my business? I need people to park here.
Yeah, I know. Well, we kind of put a hole in the myth that, you know, traffic lanes and free parking are the drivers of economic growth. Because when you see these kinds of 50% increase in retail sales along protected bike paths, and you see what happens when we put in fast bus lanes and pedestrian plazas, and they feel it at the bottom line, you get a tremendous amount of buy-in. Of course, you know, everybody, you know, is very skeptical at the beginning, which is why we really worked hard on the data, and we collected a lot of data to measure the impact of these projects. And so we kind of went from this anecdotal view of the streets, you know, oh, that'll never work, and my business is off, to a really analytical one, and we could actually track the progress and show what the impact was of these projects.
Jeanette Sadik Khan is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, former New York City Transportation Commissioner and the author with Seth Solomonow of Street Fight, Handbook for an Urban Revolution. You got time to join us on the exchange with questions or comments. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Some of the major issues that people can point at from anywhere in the country that you made changes to is Times Square. Tell us what you did there.
Well, Times Square was a problem that had been hidden in plain sight for generations. There was probably ox cart congestion in the middle of Times Square early on. And Broadway actually cuts on an angle across the street grid in New York City. And so it did great things. It created these squares that go all the way down.
Herald Square and Times Square and Madison Square.
Yeah, you know. So it did that, but it also created these hot spots of congestion. And people had tried for years to try to fix it with slip lanes and different traffic signals. Nothing worked. So we came up with this idea to close Broadway from 42nd to 47th Street to cars. And I remember pitching it to Mayor Bloomberg saying, we're going to try something new. And he was very skeptical at first, but then thought, yeah, let's try it. Let's see if we can make this happen. And so we did it, and it was a Broadway hit. We actually saw huge improvements in safety. In New York, you know, people start to almost vibrate when they are forced to walk behind people that are walking hand in hand, and they would dart out into the street. And then by restoring the street, the balance of the street for people, we actually made it function much better. And with 350,000 people going through Times Square every day, you've probably been there and seen that kind of padlock that happens in Times Square. We were actually able to make, you know, huge safety improvements. Pedestrian injuries went way down, many fewer people walking in the street, and again, much better for business. And we saw it became one of the top 10 retail locations on the planet. So it seemed counterintuitive at the time to close the street and make it work better for traffic, but we found that actually that was the result. So experimenting and trying new things and innovating is really, I think, a hallmark under Mayor Bloomberg's administration, and fortunately, it worked really well in New York City and became kind of a model for other places that are looking to move quickly to change the expectations of their streets.
A couple of communities in our region are using the road diets, where you take two lanes this way, two lanes that way, street, and turn it into one lane in each way with a center turn lane and the bike lanes on either side. Fair amount of people object to those. I mean, but this is the kind of thing I'm sure you had to put up with, where you're saying, no, the traffic is going to move differently, but not necessarily slower.
Right. I mean, that's a big part of Street Fight in the book, is basically how to read the street. And, you know, people take our streets for granted, but the way they're designed tell people how to use them. And in the book, we show how to read the street step by step, and that you can actually shave off inches and feet from lanes, from traffic lanes, and repurpose that real estate and make it work better for people on foot and people on bike and people on bus, and still make traffic work better. And in fact, we actually put GPS devices in all 13,000 yellow cabs in New York and tracked, looking at over millions of taxi trips, to see how traffic moved. And at the end of the Bloomberg administration, when we had finished building 400 miles of on-street bike lanes, 7 rapid bus lanes, 60 pedestrian plazas, and the largest bike share in North America, we found that traffic moved even better than it had before.
And how well used are these areas that you set aside for people to walk or just sit and just hang, places where there used to be traffic lanes and now they're pedestrian spaces?
Well, Jeffrey, I hope you'll accept my invitation to come to New York and check out the plazas, because New York City is a 24/7 town, and we've never seen more people in these plazas day and night. And it's, New Yorkers are hungry for public space, and we see that in cities all across the country. People are really longing for those spaces to just walk and play and linger and just take it all in. And giving them the space to do that is a really important part of making a livable city.
Email from Jenna in Ashland wants to know if you have any advice on how to communicate the paradigm shift of people-based transportation vision and policy in smaller communities where New York City might be seen as another country or even another planet.
Well, I think these kinds of changes are not optional. I think these kinds of changes are critical as an economic development strategy for cities of all sizes. And when you design your streets so that they're not just thoroughfares to move as quickly as possible to get through, and places that you actually want to be, you can really change the economics of any city of any size. And so looking at what the impact of these projects are is key, and measuring the data, measuring the safety benefits, measuring the mobility benefits, measuring the economic development benefits are all key. And when you think about it, most of the studies that we have of our streets are all about moving cars as quickly as possible and the volume of cars. And we need to take a very different look at what our streets can be and how we measure them and what our expectations of them are.
You had a chance, I'm sure, to get a little bit of a look at Portland yesterday. Does it look like it's embraced some of the ideas that you put in place in New York City, or is it running ahead of New York City, maybe?
Well, I think it's really great to see the doubling down on the transit investment, and I think projects like the Tillicum Crossing are terrific, and the streetcar projects have, the streetcar has gone a long way. It's been a model for many other cities, but I think it's important that we constantly update cities. Our cities grow all the time. They're not frozen in time, and they need to constantly be updated to meet new needs. And so Portland has been an incredible model, and I think it's important to continue to press forward. And we're seeing innovation all around the country in some unexpected areas like Los Angeles and Houston and Austin that are really making big, big, big transit improvements and really building great streets and dramatically expanding their protected bike lane programs. So it's exciting to see almost this competition among cities to see who can be greenest.
Quickly, because we're getting short on time here, but you point out that transforming transportation is not that expensive.
No, it's absurdly cheap, actually. I mean, 99% of our budget went for state of good repair, and only 1% actually of our budget went for all of the projects that I've just described, even though they generated 99% of the headlines. But you can do a lot with a little imagination and a lot of paint. You can literally, with just paint and planters and tables and chairs, you can change a space. And we've found that once you adapt a space, people adopt it.
Lots of pictures in the book to give the examples that Jeanette Sadik Khan is talking about. The book is called Street Fight Handbook for an Urban Revolution. If you'll be in Portland tonight by any chance, she'll be at Powell's with U.S. Representative Earl Blumenauer, a champion of bike lanes himself. Jeanette, thanks so much for joining us today in The Exchange.
Oh, thanks so much, Jeffrey.
Take care.